This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT-Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT-Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT-Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT-Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT-Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And it's a stark fact that 28 million baby boomers, of which I am a member of that age cohort, will develop Alzheimer's disease by the year 2050. Now, that sounds a really long way off, but it's going to be 2020 soon, folks. And as we baby boomers age, and as our population in general ages, it's not exceptional these days for people to reach their 90s and for people to become centenarians. Well, the risk for cognitive decline amplifies as we age, and we really don't have a lot of solutions on hand. Many pharmaceutical companies have invested literally billions of dollars in pursuit of an Alzheimer's cure. And yet they've come up empty. Many are actually pulling back from the research that might lead them to a magic bullet, potentially an expensive new drug that can melt away the amyloid plaque that is associated with Alzheimer's. So it remains for us to look at lifestyle solutions. And recently, I have a headline in front of me, "Healthy Lifestyle May Offset Genetic Risk of Dementia." It's a study at the University of Exeter. It's published in Journal of the American Medical Association. And the research found that the risk of dementia was 32% lower in people with even a high genetic risk if they had followed a healthy lifestyle. So the suggestion is that healthy lifestyle measures may offset even Alzheimer's genes, which predispose to memory loss and cognitive decline. So with us today, one of my favorite guests, he's Neil Levin, and Neil Levin has talked to us about many topics. Today he's going to talk to us about cognitive protection using nutrition. He's the Senior Nutrition Education Manager for one of my favorite companies, Protocol for Life Balance. Neil, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine. Welcome.
Thanks for having me back, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay, well, what do you say? I mean, you're aware of the study that suggests that healthy lifestyle, and here they're talking about very modest things. They're talking about not smoking. They're talking about getting adequate exercise, not even a very ambitious exercise program, fairly decent diet, not a strict ketogenic diet, not caloric restriction, but, you know, a decent Mediterranean diet, and on it goes. Simple measures can protect us from cognitive decline. Right?
That's true. I've looked at information from the National Institute on Aging, from the National Institutes of Health, and the Institute actually says that we expect changes in the brain as we age. So parts of the brain can shrink, especially the parts related to learning, memory, planning, and complex mental activities. There's changes in neurons and neurotransmitters affecting internal communications, and reduced blood flow as our arteries tend to narrow and we get less growth of new capillaries in the brain. Now, some people are going to get changes in the brain where they develop beta amyloid proteins and plaques, and we're not talking about the level that is associated with Alzheimer's disease. We're talking about much smaller amounts, but it's damage by free radicals increasing, and inflammatory challenges in the brain increasing that are increasing the risk of forming these proteins and plaques that could eventually reach the state that would be considered a definition of Alzheimer's. But way before that, they're detecting these proteins and plaques in the neurons. And they're both inside and outside the neurons. And this is, again, according to the National Institute on Aging in the United States.
And so the process starts very early, and it can result in some cases in relatively subtle memory problems, focus problems, performance problems that it can occur in middle age, right?
It can. And one of the problems is it depends on not only your genetics, as you mentioned, but the oxidative and inflammatory challenges in the brain that require certain nutrients to be able to manage them appropriately. And that's the basic competence of maintaining our mental health, our brain function, our memory and learning as we age, depends on having the right nutrients available to control these reactions, the formation of abnormal proteins and plaques, and inflammation and oxidation, that we know a lot of things that can help, but one of the problems is there's something called the blood-brain barrier that protects the brain from things in general circulation, but we have to bridge that gap to get into the brain and deliver things, and that isn't always easy.
And so another way of saying that you can take supplements till the cows come home and maybe you'll have a healthier liver or healthier heart, healthier joints, but it's not clear that some of those nutrients are actually going to get to the brain where they need to do the job.
That's true. And of course, diet is an important factor. The Alzheimer's organization mentions the white foods, the processed flours and sweeteners and things like that that are not good for us, the heavily processed meats and dairy products that are not so good for us, and some of the chemical additives in foods, like the nitrates, for example, that are associated with potential memory loss as we age. So again, you mentioned the Mediterranean diet. At the Harvard Medical School actually mentions components in the Mediterranean diet specifically that can promote brain health, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, fish, olive oil, improving the health of blood vessels. Omega-3 fatty acids, they cite as being linked to lower levels of beta amyloid proteins in the blood. So that, again, you don't have these material that plaque could be made out of as much. And omega-3 is also linked to better vascular health. So these are areas where we can look at not only controlling cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, getting the appropriate diet and exercise, quitting smoking, exercising, weight control. These are all important factors, but again, diet is also important.
Well, before we focus on specific nutrients, which you mentioned, there's an interesting article in Science Daily this month. Extra weight in the 60s, well, that's not too far off for many of us, may be linked to brain thinning years later. So obesity itself seems to promote brain problems. How does it do that?
Well, partially, we're not eating the right fats. I mean, you're not going to get a lot of body fat from eating omega-3 fats, for example, like you would get in nuts or fish or flax meal or certain foods like that, chia seeds. So if you're eating the wrong fats, fats actually have an inflammatory component and they can store compounds that are inflammatory. They found an association with blood sugar issues and diabetics that there's an independent risk factor from being overweight and having a lot of body fat because there's inflammatory compounds actually stored in that fat. And even if you're losing weight, you're releasing some of those compounds in circulation, providing that risk factor again. In storage, it's not so bad, but when you release it, it gets even worse temporarily. So losing weight can actually have some side effects, which people might not be aware of.
And then there's this neat substance called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And I wish we could, Protocol for Life Balance would put it in a capsule for our listeners and our consumers at Intelligent Medicine. But that's not the way you get it, right? How do you get BDNF to be revved up in your body?
Well, you have to have the right nutrients. You have to have some exercise. You know, you need the right stimulus in the body for it to make the normal compounds that we need every day. Now, some of the foods that are universally recommended for our brains, and I've looked at the Alzheimer's Organization, WebMD, the British Broadcasting Corporation, Good Food, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, the dietitians' web pages, and these foods are pretty much agreed to be good for the brain across the board. Whole grains, omega-3, other healthy oils like coconut oil, colorful fruits, colorful vegetables, vitamins B6, B12, and folic acid to control something called homocysteine.
Mm-hmm. That's the methylation pathway. And some people, for some reason, don't methylate very well. They have the MTHFR gene, sometimes a double hit, which means that they're inefficient methylators, so they need more B vitamins to accomplish that process.
Right. And then nuts and seeds, dark green veggies, and polyphenols from things like tea, coffee, or cocoa, or chocolate.
So you helped us prepare a really nice article entitled Enhanced Brain Function with Magnesium and Curcumin. Let's focus on the role of those nutrients. And when you mentioned the blood-brain barrier, that figures in. This issue of bioavailability is very important when we're talking about those two nutrients, right?
Very important, because they actually do studies with things, and for example, curcumin, most curcumin that you take is not going to cross the blood-brain barrier and provide those benefits that we would expect from this botanical, this herb, to get into the brain. So if you're trying to control the inflammatory factors and the oxidative factors in the brain, as was suggested by the U.S. Institute on Aging, then you need to be able to get things into the brain that are antioxidant and anti-inflammatory, that are going to control these mechanisms. And curcumin has a role in that. Magnesium has a slightly different role. So curcumin actually requires something called free curcumin, or curcumin that is not bound to something else, to get through the blood-brain barrier. The problem is turmeric, which is the spice that curcumin is extracted from, is actually fairly soluble and absorbs pretty well. But how much turmeric are we eating every day? You know, how many of us are juicing turmeric into our juices or smoothies or getting a lot of...
I've actually seen fresh turmeric. It kind of looks like orange ginger. And, you know, I've seen it in the health food stores. And I guess you've got a strong stomach, you can, you know, throw it in your smoothie. But it looks awful potent. And you know, I'm not sure that that's going to work for everyone.
Yeah, or eating curries. You know, I mean, it's kind of limited for most of us. And so when you extract it, you make it insoluble. You've ruined the absorbability. And then companies have all these strategies to try to restore that absorption. So they'll use things like polysorbate 80, which is a detergent, to try to get it in, and it actually backfires, doesn't work very well. It works great to get it absorbed, but it doesn't work very well once it gets in the body.
Also, that's not something that we really want to put into our digestive tracts, because detergents tend to disrupt the mucus layer of the gastrointestinal tract. They wreak havoc in various ways with the microbiome, so we tend to push people away from products that contain polysorbate 80.
I would agree. We would not use that ourselves, but there are some products on the market that do, or nanotechnology, which means you're reducing the particle size to where it absorbs differently than it normally would. But what people don't understand is that this artificial nanotechnology now creates a new molecule that goes where it's never gone before, nobody knows the pathways, the toxicity, the efficacy. Mm-hmm. You're basically starting with a brand new substance. It's not curcumin anymore. Huh. It's a nano curcumin. You better study it and figure out what it is, what it does, what side effects it has, or you don't really know what it is.
Uh-huh. The so-called lipospheric technology, which you coat tiny pieces of curcumin with a kind of a lipid coating, and that's supposed, since the blood-brain barrier is permeable to lipids, that is thought to help promote the absorption, right? But is that the way it works?
Right, and right. For example, there's a curcumin called Longvita, mm-hmm. and that was developed by folks at UCLA who are working on maintaining brain health.
Yeah, they're really experts as far back as 10 years ago, literally when I was riding around listening to, talk radio in Los Angeles on one of my frequent visits there. I'm from Los Angeles. I grew up there. I heard them run ads for volunteers for UCLA studies using curcumin for cognitive decline. So they really have been focusing on that issue for a long time. It's a center of curcumin research versus Alzheimer's.
Right. And they actually developed and patented this form of curcumin called Longvita. Mm-hmm. And it's, as you mentioned, it's a form of curcumin that's bonded to phospholipids, which help it pass the blood-brain barrier, but it actually doesn't go that far. It releases free curcumin in the intestinal tract after it's protected from our digestive processes, so that the curcumin is released and absorbs through the gut without having anything attached to it. And then free curcumin is circulating. And what's important about that is free curcumin is the main active form of curcumin in the body, and it's the only form that's been shown to cross the blood-brain barrier. Mm. So attaching it to these phospholipids is great for getting it past the digestive barrier, but then you don't want it still attached to that in circulation if you want to get it past the blood-brain barrier, where you can get these benefits.
It's a big molecule, and that would prevent it from traversing the tiny pores that allow ingress into the brain and into the central nervous system.
Right. So it's an increased bioavailability that's something like 60 or 70 times as well absorbed as normal 95% curcuminoids, the standard curcumin you could buy. And unlike the standard curcumin, most of it is free curcumin. The half-life in circulation goes up from about an hour to about 7 hours. So it's almost like a time release version. Mm. And most of it free curcumin, which is, they don't find any free curcumin in the normal curcumin products that you take.
Uh-huh. Well, so are there any clinicals on this that demonstrate bioavailability, and have they been using it long enough to show the potential for cognitive improvement with this product?
Well, they have. They've done over a dozen human clinical trials on this, and they show significant improvement in memory and learning in 30 days at a dose of 1 to 2 capsules a day. It's not a high dose. Like
so you don't have to take, some studies say, well, if you took 15 capsules a day, it would work, but then it doesn't really translate to a practical recommendation, because who can swallow that many pills? So at a dosage that is A, affordable, and B, doable, it has some efficacy.
Absolutely. And they have studied it on muscle and inflammatory biomarkers for people who are exercising or, have these transient, short-term things they're dealing with, because they want to show that it does work on inflammatory markers in the body. But that's not the goal of these researchers, as you know, Dr. Hoffman. They're really looking for working memory, attention tasks, statistically significant data from over a dozen studies showing improvement over placebo with a reasonable dose in a reasonable amount of time.
And are they measuring CSF, cerebrospinal fluid levels, to see if it actually got into the central nervous system?
They do that, but really, that's kind of the initial thing they do. But then they switch to, once they show it does get past the blood-brain barrier, they're looking at effects on beta amyloid protein levels.
Uh-huh.
They're looking at the levels of how it affects memory and learning in people. They're looking for functional benefits,
more
than just it gets in. It gets in as the initial studies, but then they want to find out what it does.
Okay. Well, I guess you first have to establish that, A, it's present. Then, okay, big whoop, it's present. Is it doing anything? And then we are demonstrating that there's actually clinical efficacy. Okay, so before we switch to magnesium, actually I want to cover magnesium in part two because that's a whole story unto itself. You are the senior nutrition education manager for Protocol for Life Balance, also Now Vitamins. Great brands. Protocol for Life Balance is the professional brand. So what do you, is there a product, a specific product that people can utilize to get the benefits of this Longvita curcumin?
Yes, we have a curcumin SPLC, which is, it's initials for the solid lipid complex that it's attached to. So it's kind of, it's kind of a fancy name, but
SPLC.
It is the Longvita material.
Right. Okay. So it's called Cogumin. It's something that I prescribe a lot for people. Okay. So for argument's sake, say someone says, I'm fine cognitively, I don't care. I have a sports injury. I'm healing from, a knee inflammation, or I have arthritis. Would you use a different type of curcumin for that? Or could this be like a one-size-fits-all kind of curcumin that will also support joint function and generalized inflammation?
Well, they have done the studies on it working with muscle damage from exercise and inflammation from that kind of thing. But that wouldn't necessarily be the first place I would go for that. One thing, it's pricier than some of the others because, it is patented.
Okay.
There's a curcumin phytosome.
Right.
Mariva.
Which I use, actually, your curcumin phytosome product from Protocol for Life Balance. When I'm just dealing with joint problems, say I have a patient with rheumatoid arthritis, I want to protect their brain, but I want to really give them high-dose curcumin that will get to the joints, maybe not so much to the brain. So that's an option.
Yeah, the curcumin phytosome actually has some really, really impressive human clinical trials showing how it affects the use of over-the-counter remedies, doctor visits, swelling, and we're looking at dramatic improvements, again, taking one or two capsules a day.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's not an onerous protocol to take these. You have to take a lot of pills or something. But it's really, really impressive, the amount. I actually have a presentation where I show it on a chart, and the percentage improvements are dramatic.
Okay, so finally, on the curcumin subject, before we get to magnesium in part two, any downside? Could it thin the blood? Say you're on blood thinners. Can it interfere with other medications? Is there a contraindication to using curcumin? By the way, there's really superb anti-cancer benefits to curcumin as well. We didn't even go there.
Yeah, there's always potential interactions with anticoagulant and antiplatelet medications, anti-clotting medications, in other words.
Yep.
And there's a general warning on things if you're pregnant or nursing, have a history of liver, gallbladder, or GI problems, consult your practitioner. And, of course, always let your practitioner know what supplements you're taking. It's important that they know these things.
Okay. So, and I have to tell you that as a clinician, I have not seen a serious interaction with the blood thinning medications. It's a little bit of a caution. But we might go a little more slowly and observe a patient when we're concomitantly using curcumin with things like Plavix or Coumadin or something along those lines of some of the newer blood thinners. Okay.
Yeah, actually, what's interesting is that because these are really well-absorbed ones, you're doing a lower dose, there might actually be less likelihood of interaction because you're not taking massive amounts of it that are, you know, not, they're being metabolized by the body and the liver very quickly and things because you're getting so much in there. But here you're getting a well-absorbed low dose that you don't have to take as much of the material. And in some ways, it might actually be gentler on the body.
Indeed. All right. So this concludes part one. We divide our podcast into two parts. Neil Levin, we're going to focus on magnesium, the role of magnesium in the brain in part two, and other strategies for forestalling the risk of dementia. That's our theme today on Intelligent Medicine, and we'll be right back.